in elevating the vulnerable and the powerless, the lowest and the least. Last week, Jesus took on the religious and political leaders of his day, taking issue with how they interpreted and enacted God's law, taking issue with their seclusion, accommodation, and defensive, destructive forms of engagement in their society and in their politics. This week, Jesus continues to offer a new interpretation of God's law, an interpretation that focuses on the internal rather than the external. Keep in mind that we heard Jesus say last week that he has not come to abolish the law, but to fulfill it. Now, before I read, there are a few things in this morning's text that could sidetrack us, if not totally derail your attention. And I do realize now that having said that and proceeding to point them out, it's like saying, don't look at the wreck on the side of the road. But here I go anyway. The first is Jesus talks about the fires of hell. In Jesus' time, that was an actual place. In the Old Testament, it was the place where child sacrifices occurred under King Ahaz, and it was certainly a place that deserved God's wrath. And in Jesus' day, it was where they took the trash and burned it. It was an actual place. So keep that in mind as we hear what he's talking about this morning. The second is that Jesus talks about divorce and adultery in this morning's passage. And in the ancient Near Eastern world, women did not have voice or agency or power. Wives were property. And so when we read passages that have to do with marriage and divorce and adultery, we have to read it through that lens, not through our contemporary lens of romantic love and egalitarian relationships. So those two things I wanted to point out, hopefully to keep them from sidetracking us or derailing us and helping us to focus on what Jesus is actually focusing on in this text, our hearts. Let us listen for God's word to us this day from Matthew chapter 5. You have heard that it was said to those of ancient times, "You shall not murder, and whoever murders shall be liable to judgment. But I say to you that if you are angry with a brother or sister, you will be liable to judgment. And if you insult a brother or sister, you will be liable to the council. And if you say, 'You fool,' you will be liable to the hell of fire. So when you are offering your gift at the altar, if you remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First, be reconciled to your brother or sister, and then come and offer your gift. Come to terms quickly with your accuser while you are on the way to court with him. Or your accuser may hand you over to the judge, and the judge to the guard, and you will be thrown into prison. Truly, I tell you, you will never get out until you have paid the last penny. You have heard that it was said, 'You shall not commit adultery.' But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one of your members than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one of your members than for your whole body to go into hell. It was also said, 'Whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce.' But I say to you that anyone who divorces his wife, except on the ground of unchastity, causes her to commit adultery. And whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. Again, you have heard that it was said to those of ancient times, You shall not swear falsely, but carry out the vows you have made to the Lord. But I say to you, do not swear at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Let your word be yes, yes, or no, no. Anything more than this comes from the evil one. The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. As we heard in Deuteronomy, God's law was to shape God's people. By keeping God's law, the people would live and become numerous. God would bless them. Keeping God's law was so important that other laws were added to keep people from getting even close to breaking the law. The Pharisees, who were scrupulous observers of the law, added new restrictions to the biblical law in order to keep the people at a safe distance from that forbidden ground. They called it fencing the law. I suppose like putting a fence at the edge of the Grand Canyon. Here's an example. After the Pharisees had determined the kinds of work prohibited on the Sabbath day, because you're not supposed to work on the Sabbath, they forbade the use of many things on the Sabbath on the ground that their use might lead to breaking the Sabbath. And this is where that foundation was laid, where law upon law upon law was given to the people till they forgot what the law was about in the first place. The result was people focusing on the external, on their actions, rather than their intentions. Focused on not breaking the law, rather than becoming the people who show God's love to the world. Jesus says he's not doing away with God's law, but he's reinterpreting it. Jesus is also doing the same kind of fencing of the law, but he's doing it internally rather than externally. Did you hear the progression this morning in our reading? From anger to insult to judging someone's morality to murder. It's not literally an escalating scale of judgment from the local court to the judgment seat of God. But Jesus is demonstrating that God wills not only that people do not kill each other, the letter of the law, but also that there is not hostility between human beings, the spirit or the heart of the law. A recognition that using certain abusive expressions dehumanizes another. So we avoid those, not just because it's a rule, but in doing so, we submit our thoughts about other people, as well as the words we use, to God's penetrating judgment. There's no written rule about what goes on inside of your head. You're the only one who knows, right? But if you're to be kind and loving and compassionate and generous, there are things that you do or don't do. There are two things Jesus tells us to do that removes the fuel for the fire of our anger, that then cascades into insult and hatred and murder. First, go first. If you remember your brother or sister has something against you, go and be reconciled with them. Don't let your anger or your brother's anger smolder. Jesus did not mean to literally leave in the middle of offering a sacrifice at the temple after they had traveled several days to get there. He is saying that we cannot think we are reconciled with God if we are not reconciled with one another. Jesus doesn't say it will be simple or easy or comfortable. But it will remove the fuel that causes anger to smolder just under the surface, that can easily become contempt, become hatred, become insult, become judgment, become violence. The second thing to do is cut it out. Cut off what feeds the fire. When Jesus says to tear out your right eye and throw it away, or cut off your right hand and throw it away, he is most certainly speaking in hyperbole. He is not expecting people to do physical harm to themselves. If we think about it internally rather than externally, is it not a question we should ask ourselves about what we take in? What do you watch on TV? What do you read on Twitter or Facebook? What do you listen to? Does it stir up anger? Does it rely on name-calling? Does it attempt to diminish opponents by dehumanizing them? Is it full of insults, publicly abusive language, and worse? Cut it out, Jesus says. I know, there's no law against it. But what does consuming it do to you internally? Does it fuel your anger or extinguish it? We're not talking about keeping the letter of the law, but keeping God's law of love, which begins internally. Seeing one another as beloved children of God, human beings with value and worth, not objects, and not defined by their opinions or ideologies, or by what others say about them. So since we're talking about laws, let me share an unlikely example from the world of law. It's been 4 years, since Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia died unexpectedly. Scalia was a staunch conservative, an originalist, meaning he believed in following the original intent of the Founding Fathers who wrote the Constitution over 200 years ago. A hero to some, and a villain to others. On the other side of the constitutional interpretation is Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She believes the Constitution is a living document, which is to be interpreted in the context of contemporary events, the context of history, the context of past precedent, and the intent of the framers. She is a hero to some and a villain to others. What many did not know was that these two ideologically opposed individuals were dear and deep friends for decades. Since long before Scalia was named to the court by President Reagan and Ginsburg by President Clinton. Ginsburg liked Scalia because he made her laugh. And Scalia liked Ginsburg because she laughed at his jokes. And the two loved to spar over ideas. The two first served together in the early 1980s on the Federal Circuit Court in Washington, D.C., from which each was chosen to be nominated for the Supreme Court. They served together on the High Court for more than 22 years, from when Ginsburg joined Scalia on the court in August of 1993 until Scalia's death. They enjoyed the opera together, celebrated New Year's Eve every year together, and their families vacationed together. There was a trip to Europe where Ginsburg went parasailing, leaving Scalia on the ground to admire her courage, but at the same time worry she might just float away. During their time together on the United States Supreme Court, Justice Scalia, a staunch conservative, and Justice Ginsburg, a staunch liberal, rarely found themselves on the same side of controversial issues. But in an era when political divisions drive many in Washington apart on a personal level, their disagreements remained intellectual. "We were best buddies," Ginsburg wrote after Scalia died. "We disagreed now and then, but when I wrote for the court and received a Scalia dissent, the opinion ultimately released was notably better than my initial circulation. Justice Scalia nailed all the weak spots, the applesauce and argle-bargle, and gave me just what I needed to strengthen the majority opinion. He was a jurist of captivating brilliance and wit, with a rare talent to make even the most sober judge laugh. The press referred to his energetic fervor, astringent intellect, peppery prose, acumen and affability, all apt descriptions. He was eminently quotable, his pungent opinion so clearly stated that his words never slipped from the reader's grasp." When asked how she could possibly be friends with Scalia, Ginsburg responded, "As annoyed as you might be about his zinging dissent, he's so utterly charming, so amusing, so sometimes outrageous, you can't help but say, I'm glad that he's my friend or my colleague." Sometimes she said she had to pinch herself to not laugh in the courtroom when Scalia said something audacious. Scalia's answer was this: "I attack ideas. I don't attack people. Some very good people have some very bad ideas. And if you can't separate the two, you gotta get another day job. You don't want to be a judge. At least not a judge on a multi-member panel." That's focusing on the internal, not the external. That's love. Seeing someone not as an object, not as the irritating idea that they hold, not as the name someone has called them, but instead, seeing the person, the beloved child of God that they are. I said last week that we are all tired of the darkness that seems to surround our national and personal conversations. If we want to live God's law of love in this world, if we want to be the salt of the earth and the light of the world and a city on a hill, then we are called to follow Jesus' instructions. Go first and cut it out. Go first to resolve misunderstandings so that anger does not smolder into flame. And cut out all that causes you to see your brother or sister as less than who they are. Later in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus puts it more succinctly. In everything, do to others as you would have them do to you, for this is the law and the prophets. In everything, socially, spiritually, theologically, financially, politically, at work, at school, at church, in your neighborhood, in your community groups, in your family, in your marriage, in everything, do to others as you would have them do to you. This is the law of love. Thanks be to God.